Om sahana vavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, sahavidyan karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu, mavidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Katakshakiranat shanta. Naman Mohabdaye Namaha Ananta Nanda Krishnaya Jagan Mangala Murtaye. Excuse me. Welcome back to our Vedanta class on Lakshmi Dhara's Advaita Makaranda. And we have just a few verses left in the text. We will continue here. Let's recite the verse, and then I'll introduce it properly. Nahi nana swarupam syad, nahi nana swarupam syad, ekam vastu kadachana, ekam vastu kadachana, tasmara khanda he vasmi, tasmara khanda he vasmi vichahad jagatim bhidam vichahad jagatim bhidam. Very good. Recall that most of these verses are intended to dismiss a possible objection to the teachings of Vedanta. In the prior three verses, we, meaning our text, dismissed three possible objections in terms of the word Sat, Chit, and Ananda. The objection was Sat, Chit, and Ananda, the words are attributes of Atma and not the Swarupa, the true nature of Atma. We had a long discussion on how that's not true. And the reason it's important to dismiss Satchitananda as attributes is attributes can change. One attribute of his body is it's a little too heavy. I can lose weight and it can change. If Atma changes, if Atma is Satchitananda now and it changes to become Asat or Achit or Anananda, that kind of change is not desirable. So Satchitananda are not attributes, they are Swarupa. Swarupa, true nature, essential nature. Now the next objection is very clever. So Satchitananda are not attributes, but rather they constitute a threefold Swarupa. That is the Swarupa of Atma is threefold. I don't know if this is a good metaphor. It would be like mixing three chemicals together. The resultant mixture would be three chemicals or three kinds of food you mix together. So the three kinds of food are all simultaneously present, and we can say that it is a threefold Swarupa. And that objection, that possible objection, is negated here in the very first half, where Lakshmi Dhara replies, Nahi nana surupam syat kadachana. Na kadachana, not at any time, syat, could there be nana surupa, a surupa, a fundamental nature, an essential nature of Atma, that is nana, manifold, multiple. So Sat, Chit, and Ananda cannot be a threefold Swarupa, but rather Ekam Vastu. Sat, Chit, Ananda constitutes Ekam, one Vastu, one reality, one thing. There are three words that indicate one thing. These words, I don't think we want to get into a technical discussion about lakshana. Lakshana means a defining word, a describing word. And there's really elaborate teachings on Lakshana. In fact, there are several entire texts on how Lakshanas work. The point I don't want to get into the details, but these are three individual words, all of which point to, all of which indicate one single reality. The reality of Atma is not Sat plus Chit plus Ananda, but rather one reality, which is Sat Chit Ananda. So here, the problem is if Atma is Sat plus Chit, then suppose you have Sat minus Chit. You leave Chit off. Atma cannot be Sat but not Chit. Remember the meaning of these words. Atma could not be Sat, eternally existent, but not Chit, consciousness. Atma is simultaneously Sat, eternally existent, and simultaneously Chit, consciousness. Similarly, Atma could not be Chit without Sat. Atma could not be consciousness which is not eternal, that which is transient. It comes and goes. Atma is not that. Nor could Atma be Sat Chit, but without Ananda. Ananda means full, complete, limitless, untouched by worldly suffering. So all three of these words are necessary to convey the one essence of what Atma is. Ekam Vastu. It is one reality, not three different realities. Not three different parts of one reality, not three different aspects of one reality, one undivided reality. That's what he says in the second half. Tasmat, therefore, akandaha eva asmi. Therefore, asmi, I am. Remember, most of these verses have something in the first person, making them suitable for nididhyasana, contemplation, as well as manana, Vedantic rational inquiry, which is what we're mostly doing here. Manana has been our focus throughout this class. Tasmat, therefore, asmi, I am, akandaha eva, akanda, undivided, partless, indivisible. In your own experience, how many parts do you have? You experience yourself as being a conscious being. Well, is the consciousness one part of you and the being or existence another part of you? That certainly, first of all, it doesn't make sense, as we just discussed. But secondly, it's not true to our experience. We experience ourselves as being one partless entity, one indivisible entity. Indivisible, the word here used, akanda. Tasmat, therefore, since Satchit and Ananda are not three different aspects, but rather ekam vastu, three words that indicate one reality. Tasmat, therefore, akandaha eva asmi, therefore I am akandaha, indivisible, partless. Vijahat jagatim bidam. Vijahat, free from, being free from. Jagatim bidam. Bidam, bid, bheda, difference. Difference meaning parts. Jagatim bidam, worldly parts. I am free from worldly parts, free from worldly divisions. Anything in the world, we can divide up into parts. And we're used to thinking in those terms. And all of science is based on that. We analyze the world around us. We divide it up into its constituent parts. We learn so much in that way. But here, the truth we're discussing, ekam vastu, is not a worldly thing at all. Worldly things can be divided into parts. Ekam vastu, the reality because of which you exist, is not a worldly thing that can be divided up. It transcends worldly divisions. It is vijahat, free from jagatim bidam, free from all possible worldly division. So the swarupa, your essential nature, is not threefold. It is ekam vastu, one reality. The word he's going to use in the next verse, and it's used a lot by commentators, is eka rasa. Now, rasa, you may know as some kind of water or sap or essence. But here, rasa means the essential nature. Eka rasa means having one essence, being one thing and one thing only. Like a lump of sugar is sugar and nothing but sugar. It is eka rasa. Like pure water is H2O and nothing else, eka rasa. In the same way, Atma is Satchidananda, but that Satchidananda Atma is eka rasa. It is one in essence. Okay. Then another objection with regard to the Mahavakya. Let's see the verse first. Parokshata paricheda, parokshata paricheda, shabalya poha nirmalam, shabalya poha nirmalam, tadasi tigira lakshyam, tadasi tigira lakshyam, aham ekarasam mahaha. Aham ekarasam mahaha. There's our word, ekarasam. So the objection that's being met by this verse refers to the Mahavakya, and we're coming to the end of the text. So the Mahavakya is a culminating teaching of Advaita Vedanta, so it makes sense to come to this Mahavakya at the end of this text. Mahavakya is used as a technical term. It literally means a big statement, but we use it as a technical term any statement that reveals the identity of Jiva and Ishvara is Mahavakya. So expressions like I am Atma Brahma, I am Atma, this Atma is Brahman, is non-separate from Brahma. I am Atma, the truth of this Jiva is Brahman, the reality because of which even Ishvara exists. There are four Mahavakyas that we often quote, like I am Atma, Brahma. Each of these four Mahavakyas is chosen from one of the four Vedas. But here, in this context, the Mahavakya we're referring to is perhaps the most commonly quoted one, Tat Tvam Asi. This Mahavakya clearly reveals the identity between Jiva and Ishvara. Of course, that really leads to some confusion. Let me put some of this on the board. Okay, so in this Mahavakya, Tat Tvam Asi. You know these words very well. Tat, that, Tvam, you, Asi, are. Here the word Tat represents Ishvara. And Tvam represents you, the Jiva. And asi, are, equates them. But here we have a big problem. Jiva, I'm going to rewrite this just so I can make my point more clear. So tat is Ishvara, tvam, jiva, and clearly these are not, cannot be equated, absolutely cannot be equated. Jiva means me, a limited individual. Ishvara means the creator, sustainer, destroyer. what can I can create? I can create some trouble. I can somehow sustain myself, and I can certainly damage myself, but that's only that much. So the point is, as an individual jiva, I am limited in so many ways. Ishvara, on the other hand, is absolutely limitless in his power and capacity, including his power and capacity to create the world. So there is no way at all that you can equate these. But that's exactly what the Mahavakya does. The Mahavakya equates tat and tvam, where the... I said I don't... I want to avoid a discussion about lakshana. And anyway, let me try to avoid the technical parts and just point out what's really important here. So the vachyartha, the direct meaning of the word tat is Ishvara. The vachyartha, that word, by the way, vachyartha, the vachyartha, vachyartha, the artha, the meaning, which is vachya, the direct meaning of the word, as opposed to lakshyartha. Can I see that? I'm falling off the bottom of the board here. Let me move that up. So these two words, lakshyartha, is the artha. Yeah, that shows. The artha, the meaning of the word, which is lakshya indicated. There's a direct meaning. A direct meaning and indirect meaning, or implied, is often the word used. So the vachyartha, the direct meaning of tat, is Ishvara. The vachyartha, the direct meaning of tvam, is jiva. But both the words tat and tvam have an implied meaning, a lakshyartha. The implied meaning is found by understanding in some detail what Ishvara is and what Jiva is. And through our Vedantic inquiry, we're not going to do this whole inquiry here, and allow me to use some shorthand, we can say Ishvara is Sat Chit Ananda, that's my shorthand, Sat Chit Ananda plus Maya. Maya Upadhi. So when we say that Ishvara Satchidananda plus Maya Upadhi, that's like, I need a prop. That's like saying this pot is equal to clay plus an Upadhi, Nama Rupa, form. So just as this pot is pot is the vachyartha, the direct meaning of this object is pot. And what is this pot? It has an underlying reality, which is clay, plus an upadhi, name and form. In the same way, Ishvara, God of the universe, is Satchidananda Atma, or we often use the word Brahman, which is correct. But Brahman, here we have not just clay, but clay accompanied by an upadhi. Ishvara is not just Brahman. Ishvara is Brahman accompanied by an upadhi, specifically what we call Maya Upadhi. Maya Upadhi is the capacity to create the universe, capacity to be the material cause for the universe, upadana karana, the capacity to be the intelligent cause of the universe, nimitta upadana, to be the nimitta and upadana karana, the efficient and material cause, these are upadhis. These are like forms or attributes superimposed on Brahman, just like potness is superimposed on clay. So Ishvara is Satchidananda Atma with an upadhi, and Jiva is similarly Satchit Ananda Atma plus another upadhi. What upadhi? About body, mind, and senses, which is an upadhi. Or in more technical terms, the sukshma sharira and stula sharira are upadhis for Atma. Here is, it would be like, I need another pot. Here we go. So we have one pot, the bigger pot, which is clay plus upadhi. And here we have a smaller pot, which is the same kind of clay with a different upadhi. Big pot, small pot. Clay with a big upadhi, clay with a small upadhi. You can see where this discussion goes. So Ishvara is Satchidananda Atma with Maya upadhi. Jiva is Satchidananda Atma with this body, mind, senses, stula sharira, sukshma sharira, those upadhis. But big pot is nothing but clay, small pot is nothing but clay, which is to say that the way this works is you get rid of the upadhi in both cases, and what's left is the identity between Jiva and Ishvara. The identity between Jiva and Ishvara are found when you remove the upadhis. Now remember, the upadhis are not real anyway. Clay is real, pot is an idea, a concept. So when you give pot the same reality as clay, you've made a mistake, an error in thinking. So we remove that mistake, we recognize that clay is not as real as pot. I'm sorry, pot is not as real as clay. So when we remove the big potness and small potness from these two objects, what we find is they are both one and the same clay. In that way, we get the identity between two apparently different realities. Here, we get the identity between these two apparently different realities. How? By recognizing that their upadhis are not as real as the underlying reality. The underlying reality because of which Ishvara exists is Brahman, which we can also call Satchidananda Atma. The underlying reality because of which Jiva exists is the same Brahman, which we call Satchidananda Atma. And when we change our perspective from the vachyartha of tat and tvam, tat whose vachyartha, direct meaning, is Ishvara, tvam whose direct meaning is jiva, and we shift to the lakshyartha, the artha which is lakshya indicated or implied, that leads us to recognize that tat is nothing but Satchidananda Atma, tvam is nothing but Satchidananda Atma. In this way, we discover the identity of the two. Okay. There are whole books on this topic. There's the one Vakya Vritti and Laghu Vakya Vritti, texts attributed to Shankara. The entire text is focused on the entire text is focused on how this tattvamasi, this Lakshana Vakya. Lakshana, and that's a topic I'm trying to avoid, how this statement leads to knowledge of absolute identity of Tat and Tvam. Now, let's come to our verse now that we know what we're talking about. So he says here, so the objection, if you remember, is how can you possibly equate Jiva and Ishvara with the Mahavakya Tattvamasi? Well, certainly the Vachyartas are different. Ishvara is different from Jiva. But their Lakshyartas, their implied meanings, are the same. The same Satchitananda Atma. And that's what he says here. Parokshata, Paricheda, and Shabalya, Apoha Nirmalam. Apoha Nirmalam, yes. So the key word here is actually buried. Apoha. Apoha is negation or removal. So here, what is being removed, apoha, what you remove, and this is a little, he has done a little clever thing. He's packed a lot into these two lines. So there is, first of all, there's the apoha, the removal of what? The upadhis. So from Ishvara, you remove the upadhi called parokshata, the first word. Parokshata literally means remoteness. And this is when we understand Ishvara to be this cosmic, all-powerful, almighty being that creates that sense of parokshata, remoteness. So parokshata refers to Ishvara's upadhi. So parokshata apoha, the removal of Ishvara's upadhi. Then there is apoha, the removal of paricheda. Paricheda means limitation, and that's referring to jiva upadhi. He has a lot of shorthand going on here. So parokshata refers to Ishvara's upadhi. Paricheda, limitation, limitedness, refers to the jiva's upadhi, your upadhi, my upadhi. Both of these are apoha, removed. And when you remove parokshata, Ishvara's upadhi, and when you remove paricheda, jiva's upadhi, you also remove shabalya. Shabalya is relatedness. Shabala means related. Shabalya, the state of being related. Relatedness. So there seems to be a relationship between jiva and Ishvara. I'm the limited jiva. I'm praying to Ishvara. Oh, Bhagavan, please help me, etc. At that level, there certainly is a relationship. Absolutely a relationship. At the level of Vachyarta. Actually, better I show you with these pots. At the level of name and form, we can say there's a relationship to these pots. These pots are side by side. Side by side is a relationship. So there is shabalya, a relationship between these two pots. But when you do the apoha, the removal of the parokshata I'm going to mix our metaphors here. If you remove the upadhi of this big pot, and if you remove the upadhi of the small pot, then you have only clay and clay. And then you don't have a relationship, because you can't have a relationship between one thing. You can only have a relationship between two or more things. There is no shabalya, no relationship when there is no duality between upadhis, the upadhi of parokshata, the remoteness of Ishvara, and the paricheda, the limitation of jiva. When both of those upadhis are negated, then you've also negated shabalya, the relationship. There's no relatedness. And what remains after the apoha, after the removal, after the negation, what remains is nirmalam. What a choice of words. Free from taint, taintless. Mala, of course, is any kind of impurity. Here, anupadhi is considered a kind of an impurity. Why is it an impurity? Because clay is associated with potness, this object can be broken. Being subject to being broken is not a good thing. Clay can't be broken. But when there's an association with nupadhi, that's a defect. That's not a benefit. When clay is associated with this potness, that is a defect. When you remove the defect, what remains is nirmala. Free from defect would be a better translation in this concept. So what remains is nirmala, pure, untainted, free from defect. This is the result of the apoha. The proper term, I suppose, would be apohana. Apohana, removal. The removal of the upadhis. And as a result of that, excuse me, as a result of that, tad asi iti, tad asi. The word tvam is left out. Some of you who know Sanskrit grammar, you know that the verb asi implies the pronoun tvam. So asi implies tvam, so you don't need to say tvam. So tad asi, you are, means tat tvam asi. Iti, thus, the iti puts that expression in quotation marks, thus, gira, by this statement, lakshyam, what is indicated. There is something lakshyam, indicated or implied, gira, by the statement, tat tvam asi. What is lakshyam? What is indicated by the statement tatvamasi? What is indicated is said in the last line, aham, I am ekarasam, I am that partless, undivided, one reality. We've been using the word satchitananda to refer to that reality. Here, our author uses an odd word. Instead of satchitananda, it won't fit. So remember, our author is trying to pack a whole lot of meaning into these short lines of 8 syllables and a quarter. So instead of using satchitananda, he uses a shorthand, his own shorthand, which is the word maha. Maha, by the way, maha is not the word mahat. Mahat means vast or big. When the word mahat comes into a compound, it becomes maha, like Mahabharata. So here, the word maha is not mahat or maha. But maha is an individual word with several meanings. One meaning is light, is maha. Another meaning is power, is maha. Another meaning is completeness or fullness. So when you look at those meanings, you can find out why the commentator says maha means sat chit ananda. Based on the various meanings of maha, maha can mean light, maha can mean power, maha can mean fullness. Based on those various meanings, maha means sat-chit ananda. Aham ekarasam sat-chit ananda. Called here maha. I am Satchitananda, which is not a threefold swarupa, but rather ekarasa. It is one essence. I'm that one essence, which is Satchitananda. Excuse me. Okay, good. Then, Upashanta jagat jiva, Upashanta jagat jiva, Shishyacharyeshwara brahmam, Shishyacharyeshwara brahmam, Swata siddhamanadyantam, Swata siddhamanadyantam, Paripurnamaham mahaha, Paripurnamaham mahaha. And there's our word maha once again. If you ask, what is the objection which is addressed by this verse? The answer is, this verse doesn't address any objection. This is the penultimate verse of the text. And instead of addressing a possible objection to the teachings of Vedanta, this verse, as part of the conclusion of the text, this verse gives the phala of these teachings, the results of these teachings, the benefits of these teachings. Although the result is a little bit ironic is the word. And I say the result is ironic because the teachings of Vedanta don't give you anything. The teachings of Vedanta remove something. What do they remove? End of the second line, brahmam. The teachings of Vedanta remove brahma, an error, ignorance. Ignorance in general, but ignorance in the form of a brahma error. What is the error? So it says here, upashanta brahmam. This error is upashanta. Here, upashanta means removed, quelled. So upashanta brahmam. This error is removed. What is the error? The error is the multiplicity of jagat, the world, jiva, the individual person, shishya, the student, acharya, the teacher, and ishvara, God. So here we have this multiplicity, the multiplicity of jagat, world, jiva, individual, shishya, student, acharya, teacher, and ishvara, God. This multiplicity is brahmam. It is an error. And what do these teachings do? These teachings perform the upashanta. They bring about the cessation of that brahma, of these errors. And how does that work? Well, based on our prior teaching, these teachings negate upadhis. So we can negate the upadhi of the big pot. We can negate the upadhi of the small pot. We're left with one clay. And we can negate these upadhis because the upadhis are not as real as clay. Pots come and go. Pots are ideas, concepts, nama rupa, name and form. Clay is the reality. So upashanta brahmam, we remove these errors caused by our mistaken notions about the upadhis. And when you remove the upadhis, what's left? You remove the duality. The duality between these two pots are removed by negating the upadhis. In the same way, the duality between jagat, jiva, shishya, acharya, and ishvara, God. These dualities are removed, upashanta brahmam, by the negation of their upadhis. When the upadhis are negated, What remains is the one reality, ekam vastu. We saw two verses before that ekam, one, vastu, the one reality. We can call that one reality Satchidananda Atma. We can call that one reality Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma. They refer to one and the same reality. And as a result of that negation of these upadis, what's left is Swata Siddham. What's left is self Siddha established. Swata Siddha, self established. Self established means your true nature as a conscious being is self-established. Do you need Vedanta to know that you're a conscious being? How silly. It is swata siddha. It is self-evident is a more common translation. It is self-evident that you are a conscious being. But about that self-evident conscious being that you are, there are so many errors. Brahma. Errors due to identification with the upadhis. Identify with the body, with the mind, with the senses, with the prana, etc. Due to all that identification, the result is not merely Brahma error, but the ultimate result is suffering. So we can clearly say that Vedanta. This is why I said it was the pala, the fruits or results of Vedanta, are somewhat ironic. And the irony is Vedanta doesn't give you a thing. Your true nature as Satchidananda Atma is swata siddha. It is self-evident. It is self-established, already present in your experience. Vedanta does not reveal Atma. Atma is swata siddha, self-revealing, self-established. What Vedanta does is remove the errors about Atma, about your true nature, and these errors cause suffering. And there's the pala, the result. So the pala comes, the result, the benefit of Vedanta is not what it gives you, because it can't give you anything. You're already Satchidananda Atma, you're already divine, full and complete. How can you improve on that? Vedanta doesn't have to improve on that. It only needs to remove the wrong conclusions about your true nature, and in that way, it removes suffering. So, Vedanta doesn't give you anything, but it does remove errors about your true nature, errors that cause suffering. So in that way, the pala is the removal of suffering. But nothing is added to you, nothing is gained. What is swata siddham, your true nature, is anadi antam. Anadi antam, breaking the words apart. So your true nature as Satchidananda has no adi, no beginning, and no anta. And these are where the errors come. When you identify with your body which has an adi, a beginning, a birth date, your body which has an anta, a date where it will die, these are errors brought about due to identification with upadis. That identification is negated. And what's left is swata siddham, the self-established, self-evident atma, which is paripurnam, full and complete. When you disidentify with your body, mind, and senses, what remains is aham, I who am paripurnam, full, limitless, complete, and mahaha. And there's that same word again, mahaha, which the commentator glosses as Satchidananda. Aham, I am Maha, I am Satchidananda Atma, which is Paripurnam, full and complete, which is Anadi Antam, beginningless and endless, eternal. And that Atma is, and the key word here, svatasiddham, self-established. Vedanta doesn't reveal it. Vedanta removes wrong conclusions about the self-evident conscious being that you are. And with this verse, the teachings come to an end. There's one verse left which concludes the text. This verse is not a teaching verse. This is a concluding verse. Lakshmi dharakave sukti, Lakshmi dharakave sukti, Sharadam bhoja sambrataha, Sharadam bhoja sambrataha, Advaita makarando yam, Advaita makarando yam, Vidvadbringar nipiyatam, Vidvadbringar nipiyatam. Nice. There's a tradition where you begin and end the text with something more poetic. And he began the text with that beautiful prayer that we've been reciting in each class. Here he concludes the text with this, something very nice, a little light and poetic. He says that this sukti, su-ukti, ukti is what is said, what is taught. Here, su-ukti, what is well said. The word suktam, used to refer to Vedic hymns, has the same meaning. Here, sukti, what is well said. Well, this well-said composition means composition, that which is composed. The composition of whom? Lakshmi Dhara Kavehi. Kavehi of the Kavi. Kavi means poet, although there's a more technical meaning for poet. And the commentator says, Krantadarshi. Krantadarshi is a word we use for rishi. So to call Lakshmidhara calls himself a kavi, a poet, but the word poet also means rishi. And rishi means one who can see what others can't see, one who has this unusual insight. Certainly poets have an unusual insight. They can see in something ordinary, like a tree. A poet can see something which is extraordinary in that ordinary tree. That's the hidden meaning of kavi, poet. A kavi is one who can see something extraordinary in the ordinary. When you look in a mirror, you see something ordinary. If you're a kavi, like Lakshmidhara, if you're enlightened, you can see what is extraordinary. So Lakshmi Dhara Kavehe Sukti, this well-composed work of Lakshmi Dhara, the poet Lakshmi Dhara, it is Sharad Ambhoja Sambrataha. Sharad Ambhas Ja. Breaking the words apart. Ambhasja, ambhoja, is a common word for lotus. The word ambhas is water, and that ja means born of. Ambhoja is a word for lotus. Here, sharad ambhoja, lotuses that are commonly found in sharad in fall. I don't know much about botany, but I presume that there's a kind of lotus that blooms late in the season. So a late blooming lotus is Sharad Ambhoja. And this sukti, this composition of Lakshmidhara, is sambrataha. Sambrataha, gathered together. So gathered together, and there are several ways of understanding this poetry. So you can either take it as a bunch of lotuses, or there's a nicer meaning, a more appropriate meaning. And here is, Lakshmidhara is, in this composition, he has brought about the sambhritaha, the gathering of things that are as beautiful as lotuses. And what is as beautiful as lotuses are the teachings of all the great gurus and masters and rishis who have come before. So what Lakshmidhara has done in his text is he has gathered together the wisdom of the rishis and all the gurus who have come before, and all of their teachings, all of their words are like beautiful lotuses. And what Lakshmidhara has done is gather all their beautiful words together into his own text. And his text is Advaita Makarandaha Ayam, Ayam, this text. This text, which is Advaita Makaranda. The makaranda, we saw at the very beginning of this text, the nectar or pollen, both meanings are there. The nectar of all those lotuses, the nectar of Advaita, which comes, you can see the poetry here, the nectar of Advaita, which comes from all those lotuses being the words, the teachings of the whole lineage of prior teachers. So what Lakshmidhara has done is he's assembled all the words of the ancient teachers, and he has extracted the nectar. This is the Advaita Makaranda. The job of Lakshmidhara was to extract the beautiful nectar of the teachings of all those who have come before. And he ends with a very beautiful prayer. So this Advaita Makaranda, this essence of this nectar, which has been extracted by all the teachers out of this nectar, which has been extracted from the lotus-like teachings of all the gurus who have come before, he says, Napiyatam. May this nectar be drunk, be imbibed by whom? Vidvat Bringaihi. Bringa is bee. So you might have seen bees gathering at a flower, maybe at lotuses. And bees, I suppose, take the nectar of the flower. So here he is saying, may this nectar of non-duality, Napiyatam, may it be imbibed, Bringaihi, not by literal bees, but by Vidvat Bringaihi, by bees who are the wise ones. Vidvat is a knowledgeable person. So may this nectar of non-duality be imbibed by the wise. Very beautiful way to conclude his text with this very nice poetry. By the way, be imbibed by the wise. Notice that this text is intended for whom? So he's gathered together this nectar of non-duality, not for those who are unwise, not for those who are just beginning their quest for self-knowledge through the teachings of Advaita Vedanta. But we said at the outset, this is an advanced text. This text is meant for those who have already undergone shravana, the process of self-inquiry through which you can discover your true nature and gain that self-knowledge. We said that this is an advanced text focused on shravana, not on shravana, but on manana and nididhyasana, which follow shravana. We can say just very loosely, shravana is following these teachings to make the initial discovery of your true nature. And what is this text? Advanced teachings which are meant for manana and nididhyasana. Manana, removing any doubts or vagueness, and nididhyasana, assimilation of these teachings. So vidvat bringaihi, knowledgeable bees. This is an advanced text focused on manana and nididhyasana for those who have already undergone the initial inquiry into the truth of your true nature using the teachings of Advaita Vedanta. And with this, our text, Advaita Makaranda, comes to an end. I should mention here that in pre-pandemic days, when we would have our usual Tuesday evening Vedanta class, our Tuesday evening Vedanta class would go on hiatus, have a spring break. And if we've come to springtime, so we're kind of following our class schedule here at our ashram. So even though we don't have live students here, we will take a spring break, which means we're not going to begin immediately another text. So with this class today, our current study will come to an end. And then after some time, then we'll see what comes forth. We're still waiting to see how we're going to reestablish classes here at our ashram as the pandemic comes to an end. And also we have to think about how we're going to proceed with our classes provided on YouTube. Of course, this text comes to an end, but our every Saturday we are presenting a class on Bhagavad Gita. Our Saturday Bhagavad Gita class presented on YouTube, webcast on YouTube, will absolutely continue. It'll continue for years. We're just in the beginning part of chapter 2. We have a long way to go, so that Saturday webcast will continue. Also, every Sunday, I'll continue to upload a lesson from our course in meditation. There are a total of 41 lessons. I think so far only 12 or 13 lessons have been, 13 lessons, I think, have been uploaded so far. So for the next number of months, all the remaining of the 41 lessons will be uploaded. So there will always be new materials available, webcast or uploaded to internet, uploaded to YouTube. Also, there are a number of other independent videos I'm working on. I'm looking forward to completing those videos and sharing them with you. One of them is a very profound discussion of the importance of understanding Vedanta as a pramana, as a means of knowledge. That's a very important video that is mostly complete. That video will be uploaded. Other videos will also be uploaded in the coming months. So as we conclude this class, I want to thank you for watching these classes. It is a great pleasure for me to teach. And knowing that you're watching those classes keeps me motivated to continue teaching. Even though I've mentioned before, even though I don't see you sitting physically in front of me, I read your comments and see how many views are coming to the videos, so I feel connected to all of you who are watching these videos in that way, by reading your comments and by seeing how many are watching those videos. So very nice that we could spend this time together studying Advaita Makaranda. We'll conclude with a prayer. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhag Bhaveta, Asato Ma Sadgamaya, Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya, Mrityor Ma Hamritangamaya. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Tat Sat.